expected the sight of it. Half-eaten was a pleasant way to describe what was left of Xavier's rail-thin body. One of her escorts cursed under his breath, and Ress stepped closer to her, a light hand on her back, encouraging her to keep walking. None of the gathered men looked at her as she passed, skirting the edge of the scene and getting a better look at the body in the process. Xavier's chest cavity had been split open and his vital organs removed. Unless someone had moved them upon finding the body, there was no trace of them. And his long face, stripped of its flesh, was still contorted in a silent scream. This was no accidental killing. There was a hole in the crown of Xavier's head, and she could see that his brain was gone, too. The smears of blood on the wall looked like someone had been writing and then rubbed it away. But even now, some of the writing remained, and she tried not to gape at it. Word marks. 3 word marks, forming an arcing line that had to have once been a circle near the body. "Holy gods," one of her guards muttered as they left behind the throng at the crime scene. No wonder Kaol had looked so disheveled this morning. She straightened. He'd thought she did this? Fool. If she wanted to knock off her competitors one by one, she'd do it quick and clean. A slit throat, a knife in the heart, a poisoned glass of wine. This was just plain tasteless. And strange. The word marks made this something more than a brutal killing. Ritualistic, perhaps. Someone approached from the opposite direction. It was Grave, the vicious assassin, staring at the body from a distance. His eyes, dark and still like a forest pool, met hers. She ignored his rotting teeth as she jerked her chin toward the remnants of Xavier. "Too bad," she said, deliberately not sounding very sorry at all. Grave chuckled, sticking his gnarled fingers into the pockets of his worn and dirty pants. Didn't his sponsor bother to properly clothe him? Obviously not, if his sponsor was nasty and foolish enough to pick him as a champion. "Such a pity," Grave said, shrugging as she passed by him. She nodded tersely, and despite herself, she kept her mouth shut as she continued down the hall. There were only 16 of them left now. 16 champions, and 4 of them were to duel. The competition was getting steeper. She should thank whatever grim god had decided to end Xavier's life. But for some reason, she couldn't. Dorian swung his sword, grunting as Kaol easily deflected the blow and parried. His muscles were sore from weeks of not practicing, and his breath was ragged in his throat as he thrust and thrust again. "This is what comes from such idle behavior," Kaol chuckled, stepping to the side so that Dorian stumbled forward. He remembered a time when they'd been of equal skill, though that had been long ago. Dorian, while he still enjoyed swordplay, had grown to prefer books. "I've had meetings, and important things to read," Dorian said, panting. He lunged. Kaol deflected, feigned, then thrust so hard that Dorian stepped back. His temper rose. "Meetings which you used as an excuse to start arguing with Duke Parrington." Dorian made a wide sweep of his sword, and Kaol took up the defensive. "Or maybe you're just too busy visiting Sardothian's rooms in the middle of the night." Sweat dripped from Kaol's brow. "How long has that been going on?" Dorian growled as Kaol switched to the offensive and conceded step after step, his thighs aching. "It's not what you think," he said through his teeth. "I don't spend my nights with her. Aside from last night, I've only visited her once, and she was less than warm. Don't worry. At least one of you has some common sense." Kaol delivered each blow with such precision that Dorian had to admire him. "Because you've clearly lost your mind." "And what about you?" Dorian demanded. "Do you want me to comment on how you showed up in her rooms last night? The same night another champion died?" Dorian fainted, but Kaol didn't fall for it. Instead, he struck strongly enough that Dorian staggered back a step, fighting to keep his footing. Dorian grimaced at the rage flickering in Kaol's eyes. "Fine, that was a cheap shot," he admitted, bringing his sword up to deflect another blow. But I still want an answer. Maybe I don't have one. Like you said, it's not what you think. Kaol's brown eyes gleamed, but before Dorian could debate it, his friend switched the subject with brutal aim. How's court? Kaol asked, breathing hard. Dorian winced. That was why he was here. If he had to spend another moment sitting in his mother's court, he'd go mad. That terrible? Shut up, Dorian snarled, and slammed his sword into Kaol's. It must be exceptionally awful to be you today. I bet all the ladies were begging you to protect them from the murderer inside our walls. Kaol grinned, but it didn't reach his eyes. Taking the time to spar with him when there was a fresh corpse in the castle was a sacrifice Dorian was surprised Kaol had been willing to make. Dorian knew how much his position meant to him. Dorian stopped suddenly and straightened. Kaol should be doing more important things right now. Enough, he said, sheathing his rapier. Not missing a step, Kaol did the same. They walked from the sparring room in silence.
Any word from your father?
Kaol asked in a voice that indicated he knew something was amiss.
I wonder where he went off to.
Dorian let out a long breath, calming his panting. No, I haven't the slightest idea. I remember him leaving like this when we were children, but it hasn't happened for some years now. I bet he's doing something particularly nasty.
Be careful what you say, Dorian.
Or what, you'll throw me in the dungeons? He didn't mean to snap, but he'd barely gotten any sleep the night before, and this champion winding up dead did nothing to improve his mood. When Kaol didn't bother retorting, Dorian asked,
Do you think someone wants to kill all the champions?
Perhaps. I can understand wanting to kill the competition, but to do it so viciously. I hope it's not a pattern.
Dorian's blood went a bit cold.
You think they'll try to kill Selena? I added some extra guards around her rooms.
To protect her or to keep her in? They stopped at the hallway crossroads where they would part ways to their separate rooms.
What difference does it make?
Kaol said quietly.
You don't seem to care either way. You'll visit her no matter what I say, and the guards won't stop you because you're the prince.
There was something so defeated, so bitter underlying the captain's words, that Dorian, for a heartbeat, felt badly. He should stay away from Selena. Kaol had enough to worry about. But then he thought of the list his mother made and realized he had enough, too.
I need to inspect Xavier's body again. I'll see you in the hall for dinner tonight,
was all Kaol said before he headed to his rooms. Dorian watched him go. The walk back to his tower felt surprisingly long. He opened the wooden door to his rooms, peeling off his clothing as he headed to the bathing room. He had the entire tower to himself, though his chambers occupied only the upper level. They provided a haven from everyone. But today, they just felt empty. Chapter 27 Late that afternoon, Selena stared at the ebony clock tower. It grew darker and darker, as if it somehow absorbed the sun's dying rays. On top of it, the gargoyles remained stationary. They hadn't moved, not even a finger. The guardians, Elena had called them. But guardians to what? They'd scared Elena enough to keep her away. Surely if they'd been the evil Elena mentioned, she would have just said it outright. Not that Selena was considering looking for it right now. Not when it could get her into trouble, and somehow wind up killing her before she could even become the king's champion. Still, why did Elena have to be so oblique about everything?
What's your obsession with these ugly things? Nehemia asked from beside her.
Selena turned to the princess.
Do you think they move?
They're made of stone, Lillian,
the princess said in the common tongue, her Ilwe accent slightly less thick.
Oh, Selena exclaimed, smiling. That was very good. One lesson and you're already putting me to shame.
Unfortunately, the same couldn't be said of Selena's Ilwe. Nehemia beamed.
They do look wicked, she said in Eelway.
And I'm afraid the word marks don't help, Selena said. A word mark was at her feet, and she glanced to the others. There were 12 of them altogether, forming a large circle around the solitary tower. She hadn't the faintest idea what any of it meant. None of the marks here matched the 3 she'd spotted at Xavier's murder site, but there had to be some connection. So you truly can't read these? She asked her friend.
No, Nehemia said curtly, and headed toward the hedges that bordered the courtyard. And you shouldn't try to discover what they say, she added over her shoulder. Nothing good will come of it.
Selena pulled her cloak tighter around her as she followed the princess. Snow would start falling in a matter of days, bringing them closer to Yulmas and the final duel, still 2 months away. She savored the heat from her cloak, remembering all too well the winter she'd spent in Endovir. Winter was unforgiving when you lived in the shadow of the Rune Mountains. It was a miracle she hadn't gotten frostbite. If she went back, another winter might kill her.
You look troubled, Nehemia said when Selena reached her side and put a hand on her arm.
I'm fine, Selena said in Eelway, smiling for Nehemia's sake. I don't like winter.
I've never seen snow, Nehemia said, looking at the sky. I wonder how long the novelty will last.
Hopefully long enough for you to not mind the drafty corridors, freezing mornings and days without sunshine. Nehemia laughed.
You should come to Eelway with me when I return, and make sure you stay long enough to experience one of our blistering summers. Then you'll appreciate your freezing mornings and days without sun.
Selena had already spent one blistering summer in the heat of the Red Desert, but to tell Nehemia that would only invite difficult questions. Instead, she said,
I'd like to see Eelway very much.
Nehemia's gaze lingered on Selena's brow for a moment before she grinned.
Then it shall be so.
Selena's eyes brightened, and she tilted her head back so she could see the castle looming above them.
I wonder if Kaol sorted through the mess of that murder. My bodyguards tell me that the man was very violently killed. To say the least, Selena murmured,
watching the shifting colors of the fading sun turn the castle gold and red and blue. Despite the ostentatious nature of the castle, she had to admit that it did look rather beautiful at times.
You saw the body?
My guards weren't allowed close enough. She nodded. I'm sure you don't want to know the details.
Indulge me,
Nehemia pressed, smiling tightly. Selena raised an eyebrow.
Well, there was blood smeared everywhere. On the walls, on the floor. Smeared,
Nehemia said, her voice dropping into a hush.
Not splattered?
I think so, like someone had rubbed it on there. There were a few of those word marks painted, but most had been rubbed away.
She shook her head at the image that arose.
And the man's body was missing its vital organs, like someone had split him open from neck to navel, and... I'm sorry, you look like you're going to be ill. I shouldn't have said anything.
No. Keep going. What else was missing?
Selena paused for a moment before saying,
His brain.
Someone had made a hole in the top of his head, and his brain was gone. And the skin from his face had been ripped off. Nehemia nodded, staring at a barren bush in front of them. The princess chewed on her bottom lip, and Selena noted that her fingers curled and uncurled at the sides of her long white gown. A cold breeze blew past them, making Nehemia's multitude of fine, thin braids sway. The gold woven into her braids clinked softly.
I'm sorry, Selena said. I shouldn't have...
A step fell behind them, and before Selena could whirl, a male voice said,
Look at this.
She tensed as Kane came to stand nearby, half hidden in the shadow of the clock tower behind them. Varin, the curly-haired, loud-mouthed thief, was at his side.
What do you want? She said.
Kane's tan face twisted in a sneer. Somehow he'd gotten bigger,
Or maybe her eyes were playing tricks on her.
Pretending to be a lady doesn't mean you are one, he said.
Selena shot Nehemia a look, but the princess's eyes remained upon Cain, narrowed, but her lips strangely slack. But Cain wasn't done, and his attention shifted to Nehemia. His lips pulled back, revealing his gleaming white teeth.
Neither does wearing a crown make you a real princess. Not anymore.
Selena took a step closer to him.
Shut your stupid mouth or I'll punch your teeth down your throat and shut it for you.
Cain let out a sharp laugh, which Varen echoed. The thief circled behind them, and Selena straightened, wondering if they'd actually pick a fight here.
Lots of barking from the prince's lapdog, Cain said.
But does she have any fangs?
She felt Nehemia's hand on her shoulder, but she shrugged it off as she took another step toward him, close enough for the curls of his breath to touch her face. Inside the castle, the guards remained loitering about, talking amongst themselves.
You'll find out when my fangs are buried in your neck, she said.
Why not right now?
Cain breathed.
Come on,
hit me. Hit me with all that rage you feel every time you force yourself to miss the bullseye, or when you slow yourself down so you don't scale walls as fast as me. Hit me, Lillian.
He whispered so only she could hear.
And let's see what that year in Andovier really taught you.
Selena's heart leapt into a gallop. He knew. He knew who she was and what she was doing. She didn't dare to look at Nehemia, and only hoped her understanding of the common language was still weak enough for her not to have understood. Varen still watched from behind them.
You think you're the only one whose sponsor is willing to do anything to win? You think your prince and captain are the only ones who know what you are?
Selena clenched her hand. Two blows and he'd be on the ground, struggling to breathe. Another blow after that, and Varen would be beside him.
Lillian?
Nehemia said in the common tongue, taking her by the hand.
We have business. Let us go.
That's right, Cain said. Follow her around like the lapdog you are.
Selena's hand trembled. If she hit him, if she hit him, if she got into a brawl right here and the guards had to pull them apart, Kaol might not let her see Nehemia again. Let alone leave her rooms after lessons, or stay late to practice with Nox. So Selena smiled, and rolled her shoulders as she said brightly,
Shove it up your ass, Cain.
Cain and Varen laughed, but she and Nehemia walked away, the princess holding her hand tightly. Not from fear or anger, but just to tell her that she understood, that she was there. Selena squeezed her hand back. It had been a while since someone had looked out for her, and Selena had the feeling she could get used to it.
Kaol stood with Dorian in the shadows atop the mezzanine, staring down at the assassin as she punched at the dummy situated in the center of the floor. She'd sent him a message saying she was going to train for a few hours after dinner, and he'd invited Dorian to come along to watch. Perhaps Dorian would now see why she was such a threat to him, to everyone.
Selena grunted, throwing punch after punch, left, right, on and on, as if she had something burning inside of her that she couldn't quite get out.
She looks stronger than before, the prince said quietly. You've done a good job getting her back in shape.
Selena punched and kicked at the dummy, dodging invisible blows. The guards at the door just watched, their faces impassive.
Do you think she stands a chance against Cain?
Selena swung her leg through the air, connecting with the dummy's head. It rocked back. The blow would have knocked out a man.
I think if she doesn't get too riled and keeps a cool head when they duel, she might. But she's wild and unpredictable. She needs to learn to control her feelings, especially that impossible anger.
Which was true. Kaol didn't know if it was because of Andovier, or just being an assassin. Whatever the cause of that unyielding rage, she could never entirely leash herself.
Who's that?
Dorian asked sharply, as Knox entered the room and walked over to Selena. She paused, rubbing her wrapped knuckles, and wiped the sweat from her eyes as she waved to him.
"Knox," Kaol said, "a thief from Perinth. Minister Jovel's champion."
Knox said something to Selena that set her chuckling. Knox laughed, too.
"She made another friend?" Dorian said, raising his brows as Selena demonstrated a move for Knox.
"She's helping him?"
"Every day.
They usually stay after lessons with the others are over."
"And you allow this?"
Kaol hid his glower at Dorian's tone.
"If you want me to put an end to it, I will."
Dorian watched them for another moment.
"No. Let her train with him.
The other champions are brutes. She could use an ally."
"That she could."
Dorian turned from the balcony and strode off into the darkness of the hall beyond. Kaol watched the prince disappear, his red cape billowing behind him, and sighed. He knew jealousy when he saw it, and while Dorian was clever, he was just as bad as Selena at hiding his emotions. Perhaps bringing the prince along had done the opposite of what he'd intended. His feet heavy, Kaol followed after the prince, hoping Dorian wasn't about to drag them all into serious trouble. A few days later, Selena turned the crisp yellow pages of a heavy tome, squirming in her seat. Like the countless others she'd tried, it was just page after page of scribbled nonsense. But it was worth researching if there were word marks at Xavier's crime scene and word marks at the clock tower. The more she knew about what this killer wanted, why and how he was killing, the better. That was the real threat to be dealing with, not some mysterious, inexplicable evil Elena had mentioned. Of course, there was little to nothing to be found. Her eyes sore, the assassin looked up from the book and sighed. The library was gloomy, and were it not for the sound of Kaol flipping pages, it would have been wholly silent.
"Done?" he asked,
closing the novel he was reading. She hadn't told him about Kane revealing that he knew who she really was, or the possible murder connection to the word marks. Not yet. Inside the library, she didn't have to think about competitions and brutes. Here she could savor the quiet and the calm.
"No," she grumbled, drumming her fingers on the table.
"This is actually how you spend your spare time?"
A hint of a smile appeared on his lips.
"You should hope no one else hears about this. It would ruin your reputation. Knox would leave you for Kane."
He chuckled to himself and opened his book again, leaning back in his chair. She stared at him for a moment, wondering if he'd stop laughing at her if he knew what she was researching, how it might help him, too. Selena straightened in her chair, rubbing a nasty bruise on her leg. Naturally, it was from an intentional blow of Kaol's wooden staff. She glared at him, but he continued reading. He was merciless during their lessons. He had her doing all sorts of activities, walking on her hands, juggling blades. It wasn't anything new, but it was unpleasant. But his temper had improved somewhat. He did seem a bit sorry for hitting her leg so hard. Selena supposed she liked him. The assassin slammed shut the tome, dust flying into the air. It was pointless.
"What?"
he asked, straightening.
"Nothing," she grumbled.
What were word marks, and where did they come from? And more importantly, why had she never heard of them before? They'd been all over Elena's tomb, too. An ancient religion from a forgotten time. What were they doing here, and at the crime scene? There had to be a connection. So far, she hadn't learned much. According to one book, word marks were an alphabet. Though according to this book, no grammar existed with the word marks. Everything was just symbols that one had to string together. And they changed meaning depending on the marks around them. They were painfully difficult to draw. They required precise lengths and angles, or they became something else entirely.
"Stop glowering and sulking," Kaol chided.
He looked at the title of the book.
Neither of them had mentioned Xavier's murder, and she'd gleaned no more information about it.
"Remind me what you're reading."
"Nothing," she said again, covering the book with her arms. But his brown eyes narrowed farther, and she sighed. "It's just about word marks. Those sundial things by the clock tower. I was interested, so I started learning about them."
A half-truth, at least.
She waited for the sneer and sarcasm, but it didn't come. He only said,
"And? Why the frustration?"
She looked at the ceiling, pouting. "All I can find is just radical and outlandish theories. I never knew any of this. Why? Some books claim the word is the force that holds together and governs Aurelia. And not just Aurelia, countless other worlds, too."
"I've heard of it before,"
he said, picking up his book, but his eyes remained fixed on her face.
"I always thought the word was an old term for fate, or destiny."
"So did I. But the word isn't a religion, at least not in the northern parts of the continent, and it's not included in the worship of the goddess or the gods." He set his book in his lap.
"Is there a point to this, beyond your obsession with those marks in the garden? Are you that bored?"
"Worried for my safety is more like it." "No. Yes. It's interesting. Some theories suggest the Mother Goddess is just a spirit from one of these other worlds, and that she strayed through something called a word gate and found Aurelia in need of form and life."
"That sounds a little sacrilegious,"
he warned. He was old enough to more vividly recall the burnings and executions 10 years ago. What had it been like to grow up in the shadow of the king who had ordered so much destruction? To have lived here when royal families were slaughtered, when seers and magic wielders were burned alive, and the world fell into darkness and sorrow. But she went on, needing to dump the contents of her mind in case all the pieces somehow assembled by speaking them aloud. "There's an idea that before the goddess arrived, there was life, an ancient civilization, but somehow, they disappeared. Perhaps through that word gate thing. Ruins exist, ruins too old to be a fey-making."
How this was connected to the Champion murders was beyond her. She was definitely grasping at straws.
He set his feet down and put the book on the table.
"Can I be honest with you?"
Kaol leaned closer, and Selena leaned to meet him as he whispered,
"You sound like a raving lunatic."
Selena made a disgusted noise and sat back, seething. "Sorry for having some interest in the history of our world."
"As you said, these sound like radical and outlandish theories."
He started reading once more, and said without looking at her,
"Again, why the frustration?"
She rubbed her eyes. "Because," she said, almost whining, "because I just want a straightforward answer to what the word marks are, and why they're in the garden here of all places." Magic had been wiped away on the king's orders, so why had something like the word marks been allowed to remain? To have them show up at the murder scene meant something.
"You should find another way to occupy your time," he said, returning to his book.
Usually guards watched her in the library for hours on end, day after day. What was he doing here? She smiled, her heart skipping a beat, and then looked at the books on the table. She ran again through the information she'd gathered. There was also the idea of the word gates, which appeared numerous times alongside the mention of word marks, but she'd never heard of them. When she'd first stumbled across the notion of word gates days ago, it had seemed interesting, and so she'd researched, digging through piles of old parchment, only to find more puzzling theories. The gates were both real and invisible things. Humans could not see them, but they could be summoned and accessed using the word marks. They opened into other realms, some of them good, some of them bad. Things could come through from the other side and slither into Aurelia. It was due to this that many of the strange and fell creatures of Aurelia existed. Selena pulled another book toward her and grinned. It was as if someone had read her mind. It was a large black volume entitled The Walking Dead in tarnished silver letters.
Thankfully, the captain didn't see the title before she opened it, but she didn't remember selecting this from the shelves. It reeked, almost like soil, and Selena's nose crinkled as she turned the pages. She scanned for any sign of the word marks, or any mention of a word gate, but she soon found something far more interesting. An illustration of a twisted, half-decayed face grinned at her, flesh falling from its bones. The air chilled, and Selena rubbed her arms. Where had she found this? How had this escaped the burnings? How had any of these books escaped the purging fires 10 years ago? She shivered again, almost twitching. The hollow, mad eyes of the monster were full of malice. It seemed to look at her. She closed the book and pushed it to the end of the table. If the king knew this kind of book still existed in his library, he'd have it all destroyed. Unlike the great library of Orinth, here there were no master scholars to protect the invaluable books. Kaol kept reading. Something groaned, and Selena's head swung toward the back of the library. It was a guttural noise, an animalistic noise. "Did you hear anything?" she asked.
"When do you plan on leaving?" was his only reply.
"When I grow tired of reading." She pulled the black book back to her, leaped past the terrifying portrait of the dead thing, and drew the candle closer to read the descriptions of various monsters. There was a scraping noise somewhere beneath her feet. Close, as if someone were running a fingernail along the ceiling below. Selena slammed the book shut and stepped away from the table. The hair on her arms rose, and she almost stumbled into the nearest table as she waited for something. A hand, a wing, a gaping, fanged mouth to appear and grab her. "Do you feel that?" she asked Kaol, who slowly, maliciously grinned. He held out his dagger and dragged it on the marble floor, creating the exact sound and feeling. "Damned idiot," she snarled. She grabbed two heavy books from the table and stalked from the library, making sure to leave the walking dead far behind. Chapter 28. Brows narrowed, Selena aimed the cue at the white ball. The pole slid easily between her fingers as she steadied her hand on the felt surface of the table. With an awkward lurch of her arm, she jabbed the rod forward. She missed completely. Cursing, Selena tried again. She hit the cue ball in such a way that it gave a pathetic half-roll to the side, gently knocking into a colored ball with a faint click. Well, at least she'd hit something. It was more successful than her research on the word marks had been. It was past 10, and in need of a break from hours of training and researching and fretting about Kane and Elena, she'd come into the gaming room. She was too tired for music. She couldn't play cards alone, and, well, billiards seemed to be the only plausible activity. She picked up the cue with high hopes that the game wouldn't be too difficult to learn. The assassin pivoted around the table and took aim again. She missed. Gritting her teeth, she considered snapping the cue in half across her knee. But she'd been attempting to play for only an hour. She'd be incredible by midnight. She'd master this ridiculous game or she'd turn the table into firewood and use it to burn Kane alive. Selena jabbed the cue and hit the ball with such force that it zoomed toward the back wall of the table, knocking three colored balls out of its way before it collided with the number 3 ball, sending it shooting straight for a hole. It stopped rolling at the edge of the pocket. A shriek of rage ripped from her throat, and Selena ran over to the pocket. She first screamed at the ball, then took the cue in her hands and bit down upon the shaft, still screaming through her clamped teeth. Finally, the assassin stopped and slapped the 3 ball into the pocket. "For the world's greatest assassin, this is pathetic," said Dorian, stepping from the doorway. She yelped and swung toward him. She wore a tunic and pants, and her hair was unbound. He leaned against the table, smiling as she turned a deep shade of red.
If you're going to insult me, you can shove this...
She lifted the cue in the air and made an obscene gesture that finished her sentence. He rolled his sleeves before picking up a cue from the rack on the wall. Are you planning on biting the cue again? Because if you are, I'd like to invite the court painter so I can forever remember the sight.
Don't you dare mock me!
Don't be so serious. He aimed at the ball and sent it gracefully into a green one, which dropped into a pocket. You're immensely entertaining when you're hopping mad.
To his surprise and delight, she laughed. Funny to you, she said. Infuriating for me.
She moved and took another shot. And missed. Let me show you how to do it.
He strode over to where she stood and set his stick down, taking hers in his hand, nudging her out of the way. His heart beat a bit faster. He positioned himself where she stood.
You see how my thumb and index finger are always holding the upper end of the cue? All you have to do is...
She knocked him out of the way with a swish of her hips and took the rod from him. I know how to hold it, you buffoon!
She tried to hit the ball and missed yet again. You're not moving your body the correct way. Here, just let me show you.
Though it was the oldest and most shameless trick in the book, he reached over her and put his hand on top of the one that gripped the cue. He then positioned the fingers of her other hand on the wood before lightly gripping her wrist. To Dorian's dismay, his face became warm. His eyes shifted to her, and to his relief, he found that she was as red as he, if not more so.
If you don't stop feeling and start instructing, I'm going to rip out your eyes and replace them with these billiard balls.
Look, all you have to do is... He walked her through the steps, and she hit the ball smoothly. It went into a corner and rebounded into a pocket. He removed himself from her and smirked.
See, if you do it properly, it'll work. Try again.
He picked up his cue. She snorted, but still positioned herself, aimed, and hit it. The cue ball shot all around the table, creating general chaos. But at least she made contact. He grabbed the triangle and held it in the air.
Care for a game?
The clock struck two before they stopped. He had ordered an array of desserts to be brought in the midst of their playing, and though she protested, she gobbled down a large piece of chocolate cake, and then ate half of his piece, too. He won every game, yet she hardly noticed. As long as she hit the ball, it resulted in shameless bragging. When she missed, well, even the fires of hell couldn't compare to the rage that burst from her mouth. He couldn't remember a time when he'd laughed so hard. When she wasn't cursing and sputtering, they spoke of the books they'd both read, and as she jabbered on, he felt as if she hadn't spoken a word in years and was afraid she'd suddenly go mute again. She was frighteningly smart. She understood him when he spoke of history or of politics, though she claimed to loathe the subject, and even had a great deal to say about the theater. He somehow wound up promising to take her to a play after the competition. An awkward silence arose at that, but it quickly passed. Dorian was slumped in an armchair, resting his head on a hand. She lay sprawled across the chair facing his, her legs dangling off an arm. She stared at the fire, her eyelids half closed.
What are you thinking? He asked.
I don't know, she said. She let her head drop onto the arm of the chair. Do you think Xavier and the other champion murders were intentional?
Perhaps. Does it make a difference?
No.
She lazily waved her hand in the air.
Never mind.
Before he could ask more, she fell asleep.
He wished he knew more about her past. Kaol had only told him that she came from Terrasen, and that her family was dead. He hadn't the faintest clue what her life was like, how she became an assassin, how she learned to play the pianoforte. It was all a mystery. He wanted to know everything about her. He wished she'd just tell him. Dorian stood and stretched. He placed their cues on the rack, arranged the balls, and returned to the slumbering assassin.
He shook her gently, and she groaned in protest.
"You may want to sleep there, but you'll sorely regret it in the morning." Barely opening her eyes, she stood and shuffled to the door.
When she nearly walked into the doorpost, he decided that a guiding arm was needed before she broke something. Trying not to think of the warmth of her skin beneath his hand, he directed her to her bedroom and watched her stagger into bed, where she collapsed on top of the blankets.
"Your books are there," she mumbled, pointing at a stack by her bed.
He slowly entered the chamber.
She lay still, her eyes closed.
3 candles burned on various surfaces. With a sigh, he moved to blow them out before approaching her bed.
Was she sleeping?
"Good night, Selena," he said. It was the first time he'd addressed her by her name. It came off his tongue nicely. She mumbled something that sounded like, "nah," and did not move. A curious necklace glittered in the hollow of her throat. He felt as if it were familiar somehow, like he'd seen it before. With a final glance, he picked up the stack of books and left the room. If she became his father's champion and later gained her freedom, would she remain the same? Or was this all a facade to get what she wanted? But he couldn't imagine that she was pretending, didn't want to imagine that she was pretending. The castle was silent and dark as he walked back to his room. Chapter 29. At their test the next afternoon, Selena stood in the training hall with her arms crossed, watching Kane spar with Grave. Kane knew who she was. All of her simpering and pretending and holding back had been for nothing. It had amused him. She clenched her jaw as Kane and Grave flew across the sparring ring, swords clanging. The test was fairly simple. They were each given a sparring partner, and if they won their duel, they needn't worry about being eliminated. The losers, however, would face judgment by Brello. Whoever had performed the worst would be sent packing. To his credit, Grave held up well against Kane, even though she saw how his knees trembled from the effort. Knox, standing beside her, hissed as Kane shoved into Grave and sent him staggering back. Kane smiled throughout the entire thing, barely panting. Selena clenched her hand into fists, pushing them hard against her ribs. In a flash of steel, Kane had his blade at Grave's throat, and the pockmarked assassin bared his rotting teeth at him.
"Excellent, Kane," Brello said, clapping.
Selena struggled to control her breathing.
"Look out, Kane," Varin said from beside her.
The curly-headed thief grinned at her. She hadn't been thrilled when it had been announced she was to spar against Varin, but at least it wasn't Nox.
"Little lady wants a piece of you."
"Watch yourself, Varin,"
Nox warned, his gray eyes burning.
"What?"
Varin said. Now the other champions, and everyone else, were turning to them. Paylor, who had been lingering nearby, retreated a few steps. Smart move.
"Defending her, are you?"
Varin taunted.
"Is that the bargain? She opens her legs and you keep an eye on her during practice?"
"Shut your mouth, you damned pig!" Selena snapped. Kaol and Dorian pushed off from where they both leaned against the wall, coming closer to the ring.
"Or what?"
Varin said, nearing her. Nox stiffened, his hand drifting to his sword. But Selena refused to back down.
"Or I'll rip out your tongue."
"That's enough,"
Brello barked. "Take it out in the ring. Varin, Lillian, now." Varin gave her a snake-like smile, and Kane clapped him on the back as he entered the chalk-etched circle, drawing his sword. Nox put a hand on her shoulder, and out of the corner of her eye, she spied Kaol and Dorian watching them closely. She ignored them. It was enough. Enough of the pretending and the meekness. Enough of Kane. Varin raised his sword, shaking his blonde curls out of his eyes.
"Let's see what you've got."
She stalked toward him, keeping her sword sheathed at her side. Varen's grin widened as he lifted his blade. He swung, but Selena struck, ramming her fist into his arm, sending the blade soaring through the air. In the same breath, her palm hit his left arm, knocking it aside, too. As he staggered back, her leg came up, and Varen's eyes bulged as her foot slammed into his chest. The kick sent him flying, and his body crunched as it hit the floor and slid out of the ring, instantly eliminating him. The hall was utterly silent.
"Mock me again?" she spat at Varen, "and I'll do that with my sword the next time."
She turned from him and found Brullo's face slack.
"Here's a lesson for you, weapons master," she said, stalking past him. "Give me real men to fight. Then maybe I'll bother trying."
She strode away, past the grinning Nox, and stopped before Kane. She stared up at his face, a face that might have been handsome had he not been a bastard, and smiled with sweet venom.
"Here I am," she said, squaring her shoulders. "Just a little lapdog."
Kane's black eyes gleamed.
"All I hear is yapping."
Her hand itched toward her sword, but she kept it at her side.
"Let's see if you still hear yapping when I win this competition."
Before he could say more, she stalked to the water table. Only Nox dared speak to her after that. Surprisingly, Kaol didn't reprimand her either.
When she was safely back in her rooms after the test, Selena watched the snowflakes drift from the hills beyond Rifthold. They swept toward her, harbingers of the storm that was to come. The late afternoon sun, trapped beneath a wall of pewter, stained the clouds a yellowish gray, making the sun unusually bright. It felt surreal, as if the horizon had disappeared beyond the hills. She was stranded in a world of glass. Selena left the window, but stopped before the tapestry in its depiction of Queen Elena. She had often wished for adventure, for old spells and wicked kings, but she hadn't realized it would be like this, a fight for her freedom. And she'd always imagined that there'd be someone to help her, a loyal friend or a one-armed soldier or something. She hadn't imagined she would be so alone. She wished Sam were with her. He'd always known what to do, always had her back, whether she wanted him to or not. She would give anything, anything in the world, to have him still with her. Her eyes burned, and Selena put a hand to the amulet. The metal was warm beneath her fingers, comforting somehow. She took a step back from the tapestry to better study the entire scope of it. In the center stood a stag, magnificent and virile, gazing sideways at Elena. The symbol of the royal house of Terrasen, of the kingdom that Brannan, Elena's father, had founded. A reminder that though Elena had become Queen of Otterlin, she still belonged to Terrasen. Like Selena, no matter where Elena went, no matter how far, Terrasen would always own a part of her. Selena listened to the wind howl. With a sigh, she shook her head and turned away.
"Find the evil in the castle.
But the only truly evil thing in this world is the man ruling it." Across the castle, Caltaine Rompier clapped lightly as a troop of acrobats finished their tumbling. The performance had stopped at last. She didn't feel inclined to watch peasants bouncing about in bright colors for hours, but Queen Georgina enjoyed it and had invited her to sit beside the throne today. It was an honor and had been arranged through Parrington. Parrington wanted her, she knew it, and if she pushed, she could easily get him to offer to make her his duchess. But duchess wasn't enough. Not when Dorian was still unmarried. Her head had been pounding for the past week, and today it seemed to throb with the words, "not enough, not enough, not enough." Even in her sleep, the pain seeped in, warping her dreams into nightmares so vivid she couldn't remember where she was when she awoke.
"How delightful, Your Majesty," Caltaine said as the acrobats gathered their things. "Yes, they were rather exciting, weren't they?"
The queen's green eyes were bright, and she smiled at Caltaine. Just then, Caltaine's head gave a bolt of pain so strong she clenched her fists, hiding them in the folds of her tangerine-colored gown.
"I do wish Prince Dorian could have seen them," Caltaine got out. "His Highness told me only yesterday how much he enjoyed coming here."
The lie was easy enough, and somehow it made the pain of the headache ease.
Dorian said that?
Queen Georgina raised an auburn eyebrow.
Does that surprise your majesty?
The queen put a hand to her chest.
I thought my son had a distaste for such things.
Your majesty,
she whispered,
will you swear not to say a word?
A word about what? The queen whispered back.
Well, Prince Dorian told me something.
What did he say? The queen touched Caltaine's arm.
He said that the reason he doesn't come to court so often is because he's rather shy.
The queen withdrew, the light in her eyes fading.
Oh, he's told me that 100 times. I was so hoping you'd tell me something interesting, Lady Caltaine.
Like if he's found a young woman he favors. Caltaine's face warmed, and her head pounded mercilessly. She wished for her pipe, but hours remained of this court session, and it wouldn't be proper to leave until Georgina departed.
I heard, said the queen under her breath, that there's a young lady, but no one knows who, or at least when they hear her name it's nothing familiar. Do you know her?
No, your majesty.
Caltaine fought to keep the frustration from her face.
What a pity. I had hoped that you, of all people, would know. You're such a clever girl, Caltaine.
Thank you, your majesty. You are too kind.
Nonsense. I'm an excellent judge of character. I knew how extraordinary you were the moment you entered the court. Only you are suitable for a man of Parrington's prowess. What a pity you didn't meet my Dorian first.
Not enough, not enough, the pain sang. This was her time.
Even if I had, Caltaine chuckled, your majesty surely would not have approved. I'm far too lowly for the attentions of your son.
Your beauty and wealth compensate for it.
Thank you, your majesty.
Caltaine's heart pounded quickly. If the queen approved of her, Caltaine could scarcely think as the queen nestled into her throne, then clapped her hands twice. The music began. Caltaine didn't hear it. Parrington had given her the shoes. Now was her time to dance.
Chapter 30.
You're not focusing.
Yes, I am, Selena said through her teeth, pulling the bowstring back even farther.
Then go ahead, Kaol said, pointing to a distant target along the far wall of the abandoned hallway. An outrageous distance for anyone, except her. Let's see you make that.
She rolled her eyes and straightened her spine a bit. The bowstring quivered in her hand, and she lifted the tip of her arrow slightly.
You're going to hit the left wall, he said, crossing his arms.
I'm going to hit you in the head if you don't shut up.
She turned her head to meet his gaze. His brows rose, and still staring at him, she smiled quickly as she blindly fired the arrow. The whiz of the arrow's flight filled the stone hallway before the faint, dull thud of impact. But they remained gazing at each other. His eyes were slightly purple beneath. Hadn't he gotten any sleep in the 3 weeks since Xavier had died?
She certainly hadn't been sleeping well either. Every noise woke her, and Kaol hadn't yet discovered who might be targeting the champions one by one. The who didn't matter as much to her as the how.
How was the killer selecting them? There was no pattern. 5 were dead, and they had no connection to each other, aside from the competition. She hadn't been able to see another crime scene to determine if word marks had been painted in blood there as well.
Selena sighed, rolling her shoulders.
Cain knows who I am, she said quietly, lowering her bow.
His face remained blank. How?
Parrington told him, and Cain told me.
When?
She'd never seen him look so serious. It made something within her strain.
A few days ago, she lied.
It had been weeks since their confrontation.
I was in the Guardian with Nehemia, with my guards, don't worry, and he approached us. He knows all about me, and knows that I hold back when we're with the other champions.
Did he lead you to believe that the other champions know about you?
No, she said. I don't think they do. Nox doesn't have a clue.
Kaol put a hand on the hilt of his sword.
It's going to be fine. The element of surprise is gone, that's all. You'll still beat Kane in the duels. She half-smiled.
You know, it's starting to sound like you actually believe in me.
You'd better be careful.
He began to say something, but running footsteps sounded from around the corner, and he paused. Two guards skidded to a stop and saluted them.
Kaol gave them a moment to collect their breath before he said,
"Yes."
One of the guards, an aging man with thinning hair, saluted a second time and said,
"Captain, you're needed."
Though his features remained neutral, Kaol's shoulders shifted, and his chin rose a bit higher.
"What is it?"
he said a bit too quickly to pass for unconcerned.
"Another body," replied the guard. "In the servants' passages."
The second guard, a slender, frail-looking young man, was deathly pale.
"You saw the body?" Selena asked him.
The guard nodded.
"How fresh?"
Kaol gave her a sharp look. The guard said,
"They think it's from last night, from the way the blood's half-dried."
Kaol's eyes were unfocused. Thinking, he was figuring out what to do. He straightened.
"You want to prove how good you are?"
he asked her.
She put her hands on her hips. "Do I even need to?"
He motioned the guards to lead the way.
"Come with me,"
he said to her over his shoulder, and, despite the body, she smiled a bit and followed him. As they departed, Selena looked back at the target. Kaol had been right. She'd missed the center by 6 inches. To the left. Thankfully, someone had created some semblance of order before they arrived. Even still, Kaol had to push his way through a crowd of gathered guards and servants, Selena keeping close behind him. When they reached the edge of the crowd and beheld the body, her hands slackened at her sides. Kaol cursed with impressive violence. She didn't know where to look first. At the body, with the gaping chest cavity and missing brain and face. At the claw marks gouged into the ground. Or at the 2 word marks, drawn on either side of the body in chalk. Her blood went cold. There was no denying their connection now. The crowd continued talking as the captain approached the body, then turned to one of the guards watching him.
"Who is it?"
"Varin Yislich,"
Selena said before the guard could reply. She'd recognize Varin's curly hair anywhere. Varin had been at the head of the pack since this competition started. Whatever had killed him.
"What kind of animal makes scratches like those?" she asked Kaol, but didn't need to hear his reply to know that his guess was as good as hers.
The claw marks were deep, 1/4 of an inch at least. She crouched beside one and ran her finger along the interior edge. It was jagged, but cut clean into the stone floor. Her brows knotting, she scanned the other claw marks.
"There's no blood in these claw marks," she said,
twisting her head to look over her shoulder at Kaol. He knelt beside her as she pointed to them.
"They're clean."
"Which means?"
She frowned, fighting the chill that ran down her arms.
"Whatever did this sharpened its nails before it gutted him."
"And why is that important?"
She stood, looking up and down the hallway, then squatted again.
"It means this thing had time to do that before it attacked him."
"It could have done it while lying in wait."
She shook her head. "Those torches along the wall are almost burnt to stubs. There aren't any signs of them being extinguished before the attack. There are no traces of sooty water. If Varin died last night, then those torches were still burning when he died."
"And?"
"And look at this hallway. The nearest doorway is 50 feet down, and the nearest corner is a bit farther than that. If those torches were burning..."
"Then Varin would have seen whatever it was long before he got to this spot."
"So why get near it?" she asked.
More to herself than anything.
"What if it wasn't an animal, but a person? And what if that person disabled Varin long enough for them to summon this creature?"
She pointed to Varin's legs. "Those are clean cuts around his ankles. His tendons were snapped by a knife to keep him from running." She moved next to the body, taking care not to disturb the word marks etched into the ground as she lifted Varin's rigid, cold hand.
"Look at his fingernails."
She swallowed hard.
"The tips are cracked and shattered."
She used her own nail to scrape out the dirt beneath his nails and smeared it across her palm.
See?
She held out her hand for Kaol to observe.
Dust and bits of stone.
She pulled aside Varen's arm, revealing faint lines in the stone beneath.